Good evening, everyone. I'm Linor Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. Well, the shortage of skilled health workforce has been on the global agenda for many years. Observers say it will be critical to have enough experts, enough doctors and medical workers in remote places in Africa and other places to attend the Sustainable Development Goals. And experts say it means that a limited number of doctors and nurses have to attend to hundreds of patients daily, which often affects the provision of quality health care. They say, among other things, more resources need to be allocated as well as training. We will discuss the topic on the program today. Joining us via phone from Boston, Massachusetts, is Dr. Vanessa Carey, founder and CEO of SEED Global Health, an organization that specializes in building the health workforce in Africa. Dr. Carey, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so delighted to join.
It's great to have you on the program, and we appreciate your time. And let me get right into it. And as I mentioned earlier, we hear a lot, especially these days as we talk about the Sustainable Development Goals and how critical it is to attain them. We hear a lot about the health workforce, the importance they play, and the fact that as we look at the goals and what needs to be done to attain them, there seems to be a lack of emphasis, or perhaps not enough emphasis, of the need to scale up training, the need to really attend to the workforce as a critical part of attaining the SDGs. What are your thoughts on this?
Thank you. It's a wonderful question. For us, just to take even one step back, health underlies almost every sustainable development goal that there is. No matter which of the 17 that you look at, you can see health integrated into it in some way, whether it is poverty reduction, whether it is gender equality, whether it is life underwater or life on land. All of these things have some impact on human health. And we know that health is critically important to giving people opportunity, to ensuring that people can live above the poverty line, to making sure that people have the ability to, have their children go to school and to live long and healthy lives. And so we feel, though, that one of the fundamental things that has to happen is that we have to break down this idea that there are two standards of care in the world. And what really everybody deserves to be able to achieve, good health and to access high-quality health care. And one of the biggest and most important things we would argue at SEED Global Health is that people, health professionals, are critical to achieving that. Because if you train a nurse, midwife, or doctor, they can not only provide outstanding care for a patient, but they can train their successors and be able to recognize problems and help solve for them in a locally contextual way. So, for example, Ebola happened at the scope and scale that it happened in West Africa because there were not enough healthcare professionals to sound the alarm, mount the response, and be able to help organize the strategy for really shutting down the disease. And that's really our goal, is to be able to empower every country to have that kind of health leadership that really is at the heart of a health system.
Dr. Carey, when you look at the way governments even, in some settings, are addressing the issue of health and especially the health workforce as we're discussing that. And I mentioned earlier, it seems like there is not enough emphasis, there is not enough focus that is put on the health workforce. So how do we raise awareness for government to understand the importance in developing countries and low-income countries? What do we do? Who does it? Whose role is it to do that?
It's a great question. I think that, public health and global health efforts in the most recent years have focused very much on specific diseases. There's been a lot of emphasis, say, on building clinics and building infrastructure or making medications available, focus on increasing technology. But you're right, there's not been an emphasis on people. I think as a result, what you've seen is that there has been an emphasis on increasing the number of community health workers or sort of frontline healthcare providers. And that's helpful to increase access. And it feels like quick solution because it doesn't take as much training and folks can get in the field quickly and you can have more. The problem is that that is still missing, I think, a very key part of the health system and who is going to support them and be their referral base and ensure continued training of those folks, and that is the healthcare professionals. And so to answer your question of how do we emphasize that and raise awareness, I think it's twofold. I think one is continuing to really try to talk about the issue of the importance of training doctors, nurses, midwives, other healthcare professionals who can be leaders of the healthcare system, really set a standard for quality care, help ensure that we close this gap of two standards of care, and to really begin to engage in that discussion. And that is for all of us who are working in the field to be able to articulate the why and the how that's needed. So community health workers can say, look, we really need the referral base because when malaria becomes cerebral or a patient becomes septic or a woman ruptures her uterus in childbirth, we need to be able to provide that additional level of care. And so having various people who need and understand the argument for why healthcare professionals are needed, having those folks also articulate it is incredibly important because once people, I think, start to hear the argument coming from many different sides, it helps. But also I think it's about illustrating it. So Seed Global Health has been working on the African continent now for 4 years. We're just starting our fifth year. We've partnered with 34 sites in 5 countries. We work in Tanzania, Malawi, Uganda, Swaziland, and Liberia. And one of the things we've tried to do is to show that by training over 10,000 healthcare professionals in the last 4 years, by teaching new classes and working with our local colleagues to create new competencies and to introduce new courses, by being able to provide direct clinical mentorship in the hospitals for both physicians and nurses in a way that the quality of patient care increases and the educational experience for a trainee, is broadened. I think that illustration and the power of those stories will also go a long way to helping to emphasize this importance. Mm-hmm. This really is an opportunity. Not many people are focusing or working in this area, yet we believe it is critically important because you need somebody to walk the halls of the hospitals we've built, somebody to be able to deliver the medications and to follow patients on them, you know, that we have brought into the system, someone to be able to interpret and to understand the technology that we strive to introduce. And so people are fundamental.
Yes, and you talked about the importance in what you were saying. It reflected the importance of community health workers. And when we look at, and I want to talk about midwives. There, a couple of months ago, there was the International Midwives Conference in Canada that I had the pleasure of attending, and midwives are just one of the workforce that are really trying to make their voices heard. According to my exchange with them, they were saying that, you know, sometimes in some settings, we are the only health worker that the communities have. They take care of pre-birth challenges and care and prenatal care. They also assist during birth and after birth, take care of the mother and the babies. But then sometimes people think that midwives do not even exist. So tell me Seed Global Health is doing in terms of working with midwives. To what extent are they part of your program and you're working with them in finding solutions?
So midwives are front and center of Seed's work. We have focused on training physicians, nurses, and midwives as our principal health professionals that we have trained. And we have built a great deal of work around midwifery specifically. We have helped open the doors of a couple of schools of midwifery. For example, the Lira College of Nursing, which focuses specifically on women's health and midwifery in northern Uganda. We help provide some of the initial faculty to work in the hospital to allow it to, the school, to allow it to begin to enroll folks. We have a director, we've had a director of midwifery who has helped us to recruit really outstanding midwifery faculty. We've put about 12 midwifery faculty into the field last year alone. Mm-hmm. And what these what our faculty do is that they live in the communities and work in the local training institutions for a minimum of a year, and really spend that year trying to support the education and training of folks coming through those educational institutions. We have valued midwifery immensely. When we went to Liberia last year, we were focused on midwifery again. So it's been very critical. And midwives can play an incredible role in maternal child health globally, and certainly in the places that we work. And so we would absolutely celebrate and want to raise the voices of midwives globally.
Okay. And we will dive into the work of SID Global Health further. When we come back, we have to take a short break, Dr. Carey. And when we come back, we'll have more. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Dante, AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this, whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late tonight, we are discussing capacity building and really the role of the health workforce with our guest, Dr. Vanessa Carey. She is founder and CEO of SID Global Health, an organization that specializes in building the health workforce in Africa. Now, Dr. Carey, when we say that the organization specializes in building the health workforce in Africa, among other things that you do, because there are several fold to your work. Now, tell us, when you look at building the health workforce, where does the process start?
For us, the process starts with our partner countries. We really ask what are their training priorities and what is it that they feel they need to be able to strengthen the health training and in what specialty. From there, what we do is we really partner with them to try to find faculty who can help fill their needs, but we also go beyond that. Our goal is to help them to be able to build the training and educational experience and tools that they need to really train outstanding top-level providers and future educators themselves. So we've helped build skills labs. We've introduced ultrasound and ultrasound training at the bedside in hospitals. In some cases, we've helped think through quality improvement research. It's really... for us, it's really an iterative process about understanding the institution or the departmental needs, and then trying to shape a very holistic program that meets those needs, and continually sort of works towards a long-term goal. Our goal is to work ourselves out of a job, so that we are no longer needed to fill in faculty gaps, but that the folks that we have trained are hired and become the future faculty.
That's very interesting. So then not only you train, but you also help in recruitment and work and placement as well.
We have. I mean, we do a variety of activities. We have helped for recruitment and placement, it's more for the faculty that we bring in to fill in as faculty.
Okay.
We do training and continuing medical and continuing nursing education for local faculty on the ground. And then we also help do things like either do small research projects, quality improvement initiatives. We've helped host national conferences or supported our partners in hosting national conferences. So, for example, in Uganda, there was a national conference on antimicrobial resistance, which I think is a very under-addressed concern globally that could very well become a future epidemic, actually, in terms of bugs that are resistant to antibiotics and can't be treated anymore. Mm-hmm. And because many medicines aren't available in the countries like where we work, that resistance can get built up easily because you aren't able to give a full course of appropriate antibiotics. And this is was highlighted as a real issue that wanted to be discussed in Uganda. And so we helped support our local colleagues who wanted to host and run this national conference on the issue. And they're now making that an annual event. In other cases, we have helped focus on building skills labs, which are where you have mannequins and tools and simulations where you can really try to learn how to address certain problems. And so I'll give an example where we have a skills lab built and people practice resuscitating patients who are near death. And then one of our volunteers was on a ward when a patient had one of these, what we call a code or this very close to death or even dying episode. And the team did a fantastic job resuscitating the patient and brought the patient back from basically being dead, and the patient went on to do well. And so I think examples like that are, do well enough to sort of continue at ICU. And I think that that's an example of where working on these simulations has translated into practice.
And what do the students say about the fact that they have this opportunity to simulate and as they go from simulation to the field, the transition?
It's an interesting question. I think that, we've heard lots of different experiences. I think the students really appreciate the opportunity to learn in a controlled setting, mm-hmm. where it isn't necessarily, on a patient, and they can ask a lot of questions and they can have that sort of experience. What I've sort of read through the testimonials that I've gotten from the volunteers or from our local colleagues has been that there's really been more time and space for education and training, not just from what our volunteers provide, but it's allowed the local faculty to have more time and space to do trainings as well and to be able to teach more also. And I think the experience for the folks that are doing the training has really been one where they're able to learn and see how it translates into regular practice. So to give another story, we have a student who is a Tanzanian medical student, Ali Asgar, and Ali Asgar learned how to resuscitate babies in partnership with one of our volunteers. A couple weeks after he worked with our volunteer, he was on a ward, and he saw a baby that wasn't breathing. And the team saw the baby wasn't breathing and thought the baby was dead. And Ali Asgar stopped and felt for the baby's pulse, because that's what the protocol would tell you to do. Mm. And the baby still had a pulse. And so Ali Asgar realized he could resuscitate the baby, and he did. And he was so grateful for what he was able to do, not necessarily with more equipment as much as just more knowledge. He ended up organizing a training for the hospital and trained 200 other people in this exact type of resuscitation. He became a master trainer in neonatal resuscitation and is now helping to organize trainings around Tanzania. And if you ask Ali Asgar what he wants to do when he's done training, he'll tell you he wants to be a Tanzanian doctor who stays in Tanzania and continues training others and caring for patients. And I think that kind of impact is exactly what we're looking for, is somebody who can help bring the leveraging power of education forward for generations.
Now, in this process, what type of challenges have you come across as you try to empower the workforce on the ground?
That's a great question. Every country and location is different, but I think that one of the big challenges that we face are twofold. I think one is that there's a lot of pressures in the places that we work and a lot of competing demands for limited funds around health. And as a result, I think it's we don't control all the different influences on why somebody who trains in these countries might choose to stay. And so retention of people is a really big challenge in these countries, because you have incredible talent that will come through the pipeline. but they may have opportunities elsewhere, and they may choose to pursue those opportunities. And that can be a challenge in terms of seeing the long-term sort of impact of training. Now, that said, one of the biggest challenges to people staying in their country is that they don't have continuing medical education opportunities or nursing education opportunities, or they can't practice what they train in. And our hope is that if we can start to change that experience and environment, it will inspire people and empower people to be able to stay and to be agents of change in their own country. And we think as we've, you know, exiting our fourth year, we're really starting to see that in terms of people wanting to stay on as faculty. In northern Uganda, we know that graduating students chose to stay as house officers at the university for the first time in many years since we've been training there, and I think that's been a really powerful example of retention. Mm-hmm. One of the other great challenges for this work is that I think people, and it goes back to your original question, you know, people don't emphasize the importance of training health professionals. I think it's seen as either elite or it is seen as takes too long because it can be 4 to 5 years to train somebody, or it can be seen as expensive because education is expensive. Mm. But at SEED, we would really argue that this is fundamental as an investment to ensure that these countries have the ability to care for their populations, to be independent, and to have sustainability for years to come. And if we don't make this investment, we will not only be in a similar place in 20 years that we were 20 years before today, but we will also, I think, be facing continued global health crises that continue to challenge our security and our well-being and just the ability for a population to have a healthy workforce and to grow and thrive. The fundamental issue for us remains that there are two standards of care in the world, and we believe that training healthcare leadership is critical to empowering local agents of change that can be leaders for their country and begin to really build robust, strong health systems that can deal with Ebola, that can deal with antimicrobial resistance, that can care for their population, and can ensure the security and really thriving of the population and globally.
Now, let me ask you this. You mentioned the Ebola crisis and how that was a reflection of the need to really step up training and other resources for the workforce. We went through Ebola in Africa, and then Zika happened in the Americas, in the Caribbean. What were the lessons learned from these two health crises that you think will be really the, can teach us all a lesson in terms of what we need to do next?
I think it's a really important question. I mean, those epidemics were slightly different in terms of how they manifest, but I think that there are some common themes and lessons that are really important. I think it's really important that there is this healthcare workforce that can address these problems when they first arise, because if you can help control an epidemic, if you can survey and stop an epidemic early, it never becomes an epidemic in the first place. And I think that that global threat, let alone the devastation to an individual population, can ideally be diminished. And that can be critically, critically important. I think that, and for me, again, that comes down to people that are very important. I think the second big issue to remember is that the globe is not an us versus them anymore. It's a small place, and we are all connected, and we have an obligation to one another to help ensure that we are able to not only, you know, ensure that people are well taken care of, but that we are in communication and trying to solve problems together. Because what happens in one country will very easily affect another country, and there are very important lessons that we can learn from each other if we don't operate from fear, but we operate from a place of collaboration and sort of proactive efforts to address issues early. And I think the third lesson that we need to acknowledge is that I think globally we value health, or we should value health. It's, again, so important to who we are, to what we can achieve, to our ability to grow, to thrive, to have strong economies, to have stable governance, to be able to access food and clean water. And so, you know, as we are focusing on health, I think it's critically important to remember that every issue we touch impacts health, and health impacts every issue. And so, therefore, we're going to have to be honest about what it's going to take to invest in good health, and that it's something that if we evaluate as much as we clearly do, just based on our response to, you know, when bad things happen in health, it means that we have to be willing to invest in it and to value it and to ensure that we are investing in health around the globe in a way that, you know, not only protects us but protects our fellow humans.
How do you monitor and evaluate the work that you do on the ground to measure its effectiveness and impact? 4 years after you started the program, what can you tell us?
So monitoring and evaluation in human resources for health or in under training is very difficult. We have spent a long time talking with our colleagues to really understand what it is that we can measure accurately and honestly, and what are the things that we can, you know, demonstrate. And so we certainly can tell you the outputs of what we've done in terms of the numbers trained, in, you know, having trained over 10,000 healthcare professionals, tell you the number of courses that we've introduced and the competencies. But what we also need to show is how this demonstrably changes how people think and approach their education, and have sort of a culture change in terms of how they think, that they think critically, that they are advocates for their patients, that they are able to actually change health outcomes based on the education that they have. And so we've spent a greater part of a year, a couple years now, really trying to outline what it is that we can measure accurately and to put those pieces in place. And so we've worked with local countries to be able to ensure that they can participate in the research. And so things that we look to try to measure specifically are individual patient outcomes, where we have had an impact on educational opportunities, where we've empowered students and faculty, how we've actually optimized education and delivery, and then what that looks like eventually. And this takes a couple years still to be able to measure, you know, how have we helped support retention of healthcare workers? Mm-hmm. So the folks that we've trained, where are they working? What were the influences for them to work where they work? Understanding sort of how they're distributed, urban or rural. Are they accessing continuing education opportunities? And then eventually trying to look in certain places and in certain situations, trying to look potentially at health outcomes even. So in a country like Swaziland, where there's a 30% HIV rate, it's a nurse-led health system, and we're now partnering with four training institutions in Swaziland to really empower nursing leaders and nursing education. If we can begin to show that there's an impact on HIV or other health outcomes, I think that's really going to speak to the power of what nurse leaders look like in terms of changing health outcomes, changing a health system that could become a global model.
Okay. And Dr. Carey, the time is it's already over. It was such a pleasure to have you. If you could say just one word as a takeaway, one word that we can take away.
It's not one word, but is that truly we need to fight to ensure that everybody has access to the same standard of care globally. And we are part of that fight and look forward to partnering with others to help us do that.
Dr. Vanessa Carey, thank you so much. And Dr. Carey is founder and CEO of Seed Global Health. And that's all for our show today. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu in Washington, with producer Kwame Ofori. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.